Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan.
With insurancebroker.ie
on News Talk.
I was reading this morning that being nostalgic is actually good for your health. This is a new study out today that tells us that those prone to nostalgia have more close friends and are better at keeping them. So with that in mind, it's time for Throwback Thursday. Today, we're talking about the very year that this happened.
I think it's very modern, very artistic, and it's about time Dublin had a central point. You know, I like it.
I don't know what its purpose is other than street furniture. And it's very expensive street furniture.
Not too bad. Better than Elton Villa.
It's going to be great for the city. Great for us. It's great to be a Dub.
2003, the Spire in Dublin was finally finished. So the design was selected from more than 200 entries, and that began in 1999 and completed on the 21st of January 2003. It's 120 metres high, 3 metres wide at the base. And it all started when Dublin City Council launched an international competition for application for this, and the fee or the budget was £3 million, which was considered quite expensive at the time. Then all of the design processes went through, you know how that works with the council and stuff. And when they sort of settled on their final design, they received 121 submissions from the public, right? Three quarters were against the project, and one quarter were in support. So they were the likes of businesses in the area, the Hotels Federation and stuff like that.
I remember this. So first of all, right, 2003, to my mind, the Spire is actually much more recent than that.
Yes.
I wouldn't have thought. So first of all, for me, I don't know what 2003 brings back for you, but 2003 was the year of my Leaving Cert.
Ah, okay.
So that is always what sticks out in my mind when I talk about the summer of 2003. Great times. Not so much the Leaving Cert. Well, actually, the Leaving Cert results were okay, but it was Leaving Cert year. So I remember this. So, you know, I remember the talk of the Spire, the controversy around the Spire.
The hype.
Yeah. And I always remember the bitching and the complaining about the Spire.
We're always like that, though. We hate change, I think. People are just, or people were so unsure of it. It's new to us. Like, we didn't have anything like this before.
Probably a little bit, you know, I don't know, futuristic, too artistic, was it at the time for Dublin City Centre?
It was a bit wild for us. It was manufactured in Dungarvan and Waterford, and the first section was installed in 2002, and then five additional 20 metres were added, and the final one was in 2003.
Yeah, the Spire. What other international hallmarks do you like to see in cities? Like, I mean, it's, you know, it's when you think of every other city, and like London has Big Ben and
Paris has the Eiffel Tower.
Yeah, Statue of Liberty in New York and, you know, O'Connell Street has the Spire. I mean, it's grand.
It's grand.
I'm not highly offended by it, but I don't love it either.
Like, I don't love it and I don't hate it. I don't have any strong feeling on it, to be honest.
Now, these were a fashion statement that definitely brought about some strong feelings. And I can tell you, Laura Donnelly, I absolutely, to this day, despise UGG boots.
I'm the same.
I can't stand them.
I thought you were going to be on board with them.
No. What? No.
I didn't like them then and I don't like them now. They're kind of bad.
I can't believe they're still in fashion.
They've had a resurgence. So 2003 was sort of the first year we came to know them. So it's described here as the most unlikely styles often become fashion fads. And in 2003, the must-have accessory was a pair of Uggs. And they're described as cloddish sheepskin boots from Australia, first popular with surfers in the 70s. And now in 2003, all of Hollywood is wearing them. Not me or you.
No. Definitely not. They were, do you know what they were, right? They were all of the girls, you know, when I was in that, you know, because by Leaving Cert year, you know, you're obviously like, you're, well, even long before Leaving Cert year now, but for civvies day in school, non-uniform days, you know, you wanted to wear your kind of, you know, your best clothes. All the girls had Uggs.
Yes, I didn't have them.
All
I felt
had them.
So out of the loop and so uncool by not having them.
Well, I didn't have them because I just despised them. Yeah. But they were also the big statement that when we all went, you know, in that year, well, not that year, but the following year and the second year after that, to the US on J1s, everybody came back, except Andrea Gilligan, with UGG boots.
I know. And speaking of the US, Oprah Winfrey gave a pair to everyone in her audience, which kind of kick-started it.
Can you imagine that in the late?
Yeah, Gwyneth Paltrow, Julia Roberts were spotted wearing them, and Sarah Jessica Parker ordered a special pair in ruby red. What is it about them that puts you off?
Despite the fact that they look terrible, they're a combination of a boot and a slipper. I don't know why you'd wear them outside in public. They're not practical, they're suede, they get wet. But the real thing, Laura, The real thing, if that's not enough of a gripe, the thing that I'm most passionate about and my hatred for UGG boots, who wants that level of heat in their feet, their feet?
Okay.
I can't, I just, the heat, the, oh God, no.
Sweaty.
Oh, disgusting. They're just horrible. They should never be worn outdoors.
I think they're just so casual for day-to-day wear, like out and about in work. But for me, it's that they're so flat. I hate any of those. Like, I even hate those ballerina pumps and stuff like that. I just need support in shoes.
Like,
and
good footwear, Laura.
So that's it.
Should be in here in the Echo shoes now. The schools. Remember that?
On.
But you know, the other thing I remember about them as well in college, when people had them for 2 or 3 years, then of course you had the dupes come out, you see, right? Yeah. You had the pennies and the Duns version and whatever else came out. And
I know what you're going to say. They go slanted.
People were wearing, their feet were all inwards. It looked mad looking.
I'd say physiotherapists are looking people walking around going, you're ruining your back, your feet.
Absolutely.
Your
Uggs have a lot to answer for. I still can't believe now that the like shoe slip-on version is, oh my God, they're just desperate. Anyway, park the Uggs. We're talking about this.
We have been looking forward to this day, to this night, for a very long time. Ireland is famous for its warm welcomes, but never in the history of our country has there been a bigger or better welcome for anyone than the welcome prepared for the world's best special athletes.
So that was Mary McAleese at the opening of the Special Olympics ceremony. So this was huge. 2003.
I remember this too.
Ireland hosted the Special Olympics, and it's the first time that the Special Olympics World Games were staged outside of the US, and it's the largest event that was held in the world that year. And the numbers, Andrea, are staggering when you look at this event. Athletes travelled from 168 countries, 7,000 athletes took part, accompanied by 2,000 coaches, tens of thousands of family members and friends, and 30,000 volunteers. You'll remember that, the volunteer drive, the people, everyone.
Loads of people signed up to be volunteers for this.
Yeah, it was huge. And host towns and cities as well. So 168 cities, towns and villages across Ireland hosted athletes and their teams from all over the world. The opening ceremony, of course, at Croke Park, which we just heard about there, was watched by 80,000 people and a global television audience of millions. 500,000 spectators attended, 2,000 Irish and international media. So you can imagine the organisation that went into that.
It was a 2-week event, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And
it was massive. And then, while we're talking about how big it was in 2003, it's also had a really big effect since then, because the number of Special Olympics clubs has doubled. So there's now 400. The number of athletes has increased. The number of volunteers has increased. And the sports on offer also increased. And as well as that, the funding that's given to Special Olympics increased. So that's obviously what it means when you put such a spotlight on it here in Ireland.
Yeah. It was fantastic. Huge event, really well run. I do remember a lot of people actually being called on to, you know, they were looking, I think they were seeking out volunteers, because obviously they required so many to, you know, to host and support the operation.
And I remember the people who subscribed for that, like the organisation of it, the training that they had to do, and all the organisation, like, we just don't even realise how much goes on behind the scenes, but it was huge, absolutely huge.
That was here at home. It was a really big international, world, global story that year too, Laura.
Yeah, 2003, on the 9th of April, just 3 weeks into the invasion of Iraq, US forces pulled down a statue of Saddam Hussein in Baghdad's Firdaus Square, and that symbolised the end of the Iraqi president's long and often brutal reign, as we know, and a major early victory for the US. So Saddam Hussein was then in hiding. Much of the city was under US control. And the events later became known as the fall of Baghdad. Then Saddam Hussein was captured by US forces later this year, 2003, December, executed in 2006. But the US didn't formally withdraw from Iraq until 2011, 8 years after that huge conflict first began.
Now, on a much lighter note, 2003 brought us many things, good and bad, Laura, but it also brought us this song. Mickey Joe Hart. I love that song.
You'd love that. You've been singing and dancing along to it. So Mickey Joe Hart was the winner of the inaugural Eurostar competition.
I kind of forget that, you know.
Yeah, so did I. And he went on to compete in the Eurovision with that song we've just heard there, We've Got the World. So that took part at the end of 2002 and into 2003. And then it was decided that the winner of Eurostar would then be sent on to represent Ireland at the Eurovision. And the show was hosted by Ray Darcy and the talent spotter was Phil Coulter with Kerry Katona.
Kerry Katona,
I don't
right,
remember
yeah.
the controversy that we had about judges recently when Kerry Katona was on the panel.
No, I remember the competition, Eurostar, but I forgot that that's the how
late, yes.
Mickey Jo Hart's We've Got the World came about yeah. or came to existence.
And you reacted yeah. there loving that song.
Oh my God, I love it. It's such a tune.
I was at a wedding recently and the bride and groom walked into the reception.
No
that song.
Way.
It's brilliant for that. So he didn't do so well in the Eurovision though. So
but listen, he's got great mileage out of this. He's Mickey Jo Hart is a lovely
yes,
fella. I met him
going.
Actually, I met him last year at Electro or not was it Electro Picnic I met him he was singing at the Today FM Soundgarden oh, yeah. and he's great he's yeah. brilliant it's, and I'm delighted it's still a tune filling uh-huh. floors across the country Laura Donnelly now in 2025 that's not the only song we're talking about yes Mickey Jo Hart's We've Got the World is a tune from 2003 you've some other tunes for us
yes I'm going to test
number you. These were the number one songs this was the number one song in the UK
On
this week, but in what year? Uptown girl, she's been living in her uptown world. I bet she never had a backstreet guy. I bet her mama never told her why.
I'm expecting you to know this.
No, do you know what? I have to be honest now, right?
You're number
this
one
is
Westlife
my,
fan.
I am. I am the number one Westlife fan, right? But I do not like this song. It's yeah. my one song that Westlife sing that I can't stand.
You support them hugely in
yeah,
other ways.
I still support them. I'll give them an exemption. I just don't like this song.
Yeah, fair.
So now what? But you see, it's also it's a cover as well.
Yeah.
So now what year did they sing this? I'm going to say like 2001.
Exactly.
Stop.
You nailed it.
No way. Well, that was a total guess.
That's your fandom of Westlife coming through no matter
yeah,
what.
Yeah, well, I didn't. Yeah, I knew it was kind of little bit earlier than some of the stuff that I really love, but right, so it's 2001.
Yep.
Well, that was the number one song on this week in 2001 in the UK. This was number one in the US. Never gonna make you cry. Never gonna say goodbye. Never gonna tell a lie. Now, this is where you've lost me. Haven't a breeze. So I'm just going to guess 1981, but I couldn't tell you.
Rick Astley, Never Gonna Give You Up, number one in 1988.
Well,
too bad.
The same decade,
yeah,
I suppose.
Close.
Listen, there's been times, Laura.
You've been on another planet.
2 decades out, so that's pretty good going. That was number one in the US. This, though, was number one, and this week in Ireland. Stay.
I'll be really impressed if you get that.
Like genuinely haven't a clue. I'm going. So first of all, it's Stay.
Shakespeare's sister.
Is that who writes? Mm-hmm. Okay. I don't know, 1990, but
1992.
Alas.
Close.
I'm telling you, I'm at my best.
Yeah.
When I don't know.
Just go for it.
I should just lean into this and pretend. I just need to stop being so goddamn honest, Laura. 1992, I should say. That was Stay.
1992.
Yeah, we are talking, of course, about 2003. That is Throwback Thursday. Laura Donnelly, thanks a million for joining us here on Lunchtime Live. Of course, Laura from the News Talk newsroom.
Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan.
With insurancebroker.ie.
Weekdays at midday on News Talk.